Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Eurogamer podcast. I'm Bertie, your host, and every 2 weeks I find someone interesting from the world of games to talk to. Remember, supporters of the Eurogamer website get these episodes first, along with lots of other nifty things like ad-free viewing and exclusive articles. Check the description below to find out more. Today on the podcast, someone who's helped rewrite the rules on disabilities in famous role-playing worlds like Dungeons & Dragons and The Witcher, as well as Cyberpunk, Pathfinder, Starfinder, and Hellboy. There's quite a lot. There's someone whose combat wheelchair add-on for D&D has been praised not only by the many people it now helps represent, but by D&D maker Wizards of the Coast itself, and by Critical Role's Matt Mercer, whoever he is. And there's someone whose explanation of Geralt of Rivia as someone with a disability gained the attention of the showrunner of The Witcher Netflix series, Lauren Hissrich. They are writer, designer, and consultant Sarah Thompson. Hello.
Hi.
Did I get everything correct there?
I think that is everything.
It's
surprisingly long when other people, you know, talk about it, which is, yeah, always just surprising.
It's nice, isn't it? It's a reminder that we do quite a lot in our lives. And yeah. Sometimes we think like we have to achieve more.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I remember the Geralt of Rivia conversation about disability, because I remember asking you if you'd write a piece for Eurogamer, which you did, which I'll link in the description below. But in a nutshell, it's that Geralt suffers a serious injury over the course of his adventuring, as you probably would, given his line of work. And it's an injury that the games and series either seem to ignore or hide. Have I got that right?
It's this conflation no. with in the books that eventually the injury is... oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm forgetting her name. But she, one of the sorceresses, I think it's in Lady of the Lake, she basically heals, and people seem to conflate healing an injury with curing, which isn't necessarily the same thing.
I see.
And
because something that's healed can leave behind
scars and, you know, an injury and stuff. And it first gets brought up in the Baptism of Fire novel. At the beginning of that, it's when Geralt's injury heals, and using the Bracolan Forest waters and Con Inhaler plant, I think that's how you pronounce it. It gets healed, and his kind of journey with dealing with chronic pain and the instability in that joint, and how, you know, it is a disability, and why it's important, you know, that we don't forget that about the character, especially a character who's seen as, you know, so strong and very central to a lot of people's like idea of what a fantasy hero is. People think Geralt, he is also disabled as well. And you know, and in the response to that article and the tweet as well, some people seem to think that calling him disabled was some kind of detraction upon his character. And it's not. It's not a detraction at all. You know, and the fact that people think it is kind of shows that, you know, issue that we have in fantasy with, you know, people only thinking able-bodied character as the hero being central, you know, and the fact that disabled people can very much be heroes as well, both in, you know, real life and in our fantasies.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of the attention that well, it was originally a thread on Twitter, and then it became a piece. But I remember seeing some of the attention that thread on Twitter got, and obviously Twitter attracts people who don't stop and think a lot of the time, which is a shame, but shows, as you mentioned, that there's still a lot of work to do here to educate people and to open people's minds and to change people's minds. And one of the people that this got through to, who wasn't necessarily interacting with it in that way, but was the Netflix Witcher series showrunner, Lauren Hissrich, who replied to the tweet and said something like, "Oh, I didn't think about this when I was reading the books. I will now think about it." And that obviously then focused a lot more attention back on the tweet. What was that like? Did you end up talking to her in the end?
Yeah, we talked in just DMs on Twitter.
Oh, right.
She was she reached out and she went, "Yeah, I'm going to reread the books." And reread it with that perspective in mind, specifically when I get to that book where it happens. And she was very kind and supportive of it, and you know, also said to the fact that she hadn't thought of that or hadn't realized that about Geralt, and you know, she felt that spoke, you know, of the same issues that I've been trying to address, where, you know, either disability gets covered up or it's not considered part of the, you know, what it takes to be a hero. You know, a disabled person isn't usually considered that in fantasy or, you know, our kind of fantasy games, you know, worlds, etc. She was very kind it was very surreal.
I can imagine.
I was just riding the high off like season one of The Witcher because I really loved it. As somebody who read the books, I thought it was a really good like adaptation of Last Wish, and really enjoyed it. And I made that Twitter thread purely because I really appreciated, I just really loved The Witcher and I really appreciate it. And I wanted to kind of share that in some way, and speak about a part of the books that spoke to me as someone who read them, it was great, like, but also very surreal.
But you also, I mean, you say you're someone who's read the books, but you are also someone who's thought very deeply about the Witcher universe because you've worked on the Witcher tabletop role-playing game as well.
Yes.
And you had worked on it at this point? That was before, I think.
I had worked on it. By then I'd written my first adventure. It hadn't been published yet.
Okay.
But it had been written by that point.
So was this something that you had addressed in the game itself?
In like personal stuff I'd written for the game, yes. And in that adventure I'd written, I hadn't directly addressed it, but I had written in some NPCs who are disabled and they've got little advice bars and such on how you would GM and roleplay that kind of character, and how to do it, you know, sensitively and such. And in my more recent work with Arthalsorian, it's been a bit more direct with regards to disability. I can't say a lot on it, but it's been a lot more direct with working on the kind of disability representation and such.
And you can't say much because there's a new adventure coming out and you don't want to spoil it, or?
There's a new adventure. I've written the adventure for the upcoming Tome of Chaos installment for the games. Some other stuff that's going to be coming out later down the line, which is part of their DLCs that they do. I can't remember what we call them for The Witcher. I think we call them Rodolph's Wagon or something on the website. It's essentially like the Witcher equivalent of what they do for the Cyberpunk Red DLCs.
So you speak to Lauren Hisrich, and she says she's going to go and read and read the books. And to be clear, one of the things you were asking about in the piece that you wrote is that people consult with people with disabilities. Hire a consultant, bring someone in. You know, don't try and think of it yourself if you don't know what you're talking about. Get someone who does. Presumably, you didn't then consult on the series from then on.
No.
But did you get a sense, because now obviously we've had a second series, do you get a sense that any of the things you were talking about were seen or heard or portrayed more in the series? Because of course one of the characters, Yennefer, has quite an obvious disability before she is healed or cured. I'm not sure what the word would be. Did you see any, what did you think of the second series in that regard?
Second series, overall enjoyed, but there were things I felt that it had been taken on board, at least, because in the background, even though there weren't any like directly, main characters who were disabled, there was in the background of a couple of shots, we saw wheelchair using people in the background and just small things like that, meant an awful lot. I know that Yennefer's transformation in the first season and in their books as well has left, a bad taste, rightfully so, in a lot of disabled people's mouths. And I feel it runs pretty deep. It's kind of like a complex topic, both in it has its hands in the roots of ableism within fairy tales themselves, how if you work hard enough and you try hard enough and you're a good enough person, you'll be magically cured of your illness or disability, which we see a lot in fairy tales. One of the most noticeable being the girl without hands. And, she has to become a good person in order to get her hands back. And with The Witcher obviously drawing a lot on fairy tales for its setting, of course it's going to kind of go hand in hand. And you can kind of see the parallels of that a lot with Yennefer's story. If she works hard enough and is good enough at magic, then she can be cured of her disability, which happens. And it kind of perpetuates that. But I do feel that with the TV show, at some point, they didn't do it in season two, but maybe in the future, it could be something that gets addressed or, brought up and discussed, and have it be, a significant part of Yennefer's character development. Because I understand from like how season two went, that even though it clearly draws on the Witcher setting and characters and everything, it's not one for one following the books directly, with the changes that happened in season two. So I feel like, they have that opportunity to really kind of address it in a way that was never really addressed in the novels, at least not from Yennefer's point of view. It was more addressed from Geralt's, not perfectly, but it was addressed in Geralt's point of view. Hopefully it can be brought up, and I'd like to see it brought up for sure. And I'm kind of hopeful with even just that kind of small, showing of disabled people in the Witcher setting, even just in the background of scenes, while disappointing that we haven't had a disabled character or anything, that at least we, saw it where possibly, I don't want to say that like I'm solely responsible for it, it's not, but like, at least to see that an article and a point that I brought up at least was, took into consideration, and has, at least had some, hopefully some effect, on seeing, a wheelchair using character, which we wouldn't see normally, especially in like a gritty dark fantasy. It's not something that usually gets brought up, unless the person's being seen as like a burden or is evil in some way, or, you know, inherently bad because of their disability. So hopefully, like, we get to see it addressed a bit more in The Witcher. I think that would just be really cool to see, and would mean a lot, because there are a lot of people, you know, who The Witcher means a lot to, and especially a lot of disabled people who it means a lot to as well. So I think it would just be really cool, like, to get to see that.
Yeah. Are there any really good examples of a character with a disability in a fantasy or fairy tale kind of setting?
There have been a few, and it's never like solely like their good representation or bad representation. They usually exist in this kind of gray area where the representation is good, but there are still flaws or pitfalls that it suffers with, usually because it's able-bodied people writing it or created that character. For example, even things as small as, say, in X-Men, superhero fantasy, Charles Xavier, you know, famous, iconic wheelchair user, in the background of pretty much every scene where he's in his home at, you know, the school, there are stairs everywhere, and the only elevator is one going down into the basement. So how does he get up to his office? You know, the small things like that, inconsistencies. Toph in Airbender being blind, but technically still able to see because of a magical power.
In Daredevil,
can technically see colors and patterns, even though he is blind. And it's very like inaccurate representation of the echolocation that blind people genuinely can and do use to navigate. Yeah. They kind of exist in that kind of gray area where like they're good, but you can see where, you know, even though the intent was like good and they're a well thought out character, there are just things that maybe wouldn't be caught by able-bodied people, but are very much picked up on and noticed by disabled people. I talked about it on a stream, and one of the people that I was on stream with, Noir, he was saying that, you know, it's the same with when you can tell a white person has written a black character, because there are just tells. And you get that as well with able-bodied people writing disabled characters, especially when they write, you know, disabled villains. That's usually one of like the biggest. You get a lot of red flags from it. There have been like good, like, I don't want to say attempts, because for the most part they are genuinely well-written characters. It's just that there are areas where either it doesn't portray the disability genuinely, or has a misunderstanding on how disability works, which sucks, because, you know, disabled people have as much right to be in fantasy as everyone else.
Absolutely. So I want to go back in time a tiny little bit, just to kind of find out how you end up in a consulting kind of role-playing, writing a role, really. Mm-hmm. So how old are you when tabletop games or games in general, do you play video games, I presume you do?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how old are you when games become a part of your life? Do you remember the moment?
I don't remember the exact age, but I remember having a GameCube and playing on that. I was more of a console kid growing up rather than PC gaming. But and it was very much Nintendo was mainly what I played. So video games have been part of it earlier, and I didn't really get into tabletop until... properly until I was 17, 18-ish.
Okay.
So quite recent in comparison. Like I tried tabletop before that. I tried D&D before that back when it was fourth edition. And I think I must have been 14 at that point. But it was a really bad experience and it made me like not want to play.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, it's just not.
What happened?
It was, I played a female character and I was the only one playing one at the table and the rest were all boys. And the DM decided to make my character just constantly the damsel in distress that the rest of the party got to save. And I was like, wow, D&D sucks. Like, this is rubbish. This is boring. And, you know, got back into it by the end of high school, just before I went to university, and kind of fell in love with the game because I fell in with, like, you know, the right group of people to play with. And I was like, oh, no, this is what D&D is meant to be. It's meant to be fun. and everyone's meant to have fun. And yeah, it all kind of took off from there. And I got really passionate about it through university, especially. But yeah, like video games have been a part of it longer, I think. But yeah, kind of both, really. Like, you know, I still enjoy playing video games, but I don't get to play as much tabletop as I used to now because I'm more busy writing for it than playing it.
So when you were a child, was it in your mind then, did you ever think you'd end up in this position writing about games, or did you have other aspirations?
No, it was when I remember that I really wanted to be a vet, but then I was really bad at science. Okay. I was like good at chemistry, but I was bad at biology and physics. So I was like, yeah, like it's not for me. And then I got into writing for a while through English, and I've always enjoyed that and reading. But I didn't think I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be an author or anything. I didn't think much of it. I wasn't sure what I was going to do by the end of high school. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go to university. But I went in the end, kind of just, I think it was literally like a week or something before applications closed. I was like, yeah, I'll apply.
Wow.
Because, you know, why not? It's worth it. So I applied, hoping, you know, I'd probably have more time to think about what I wanted whilst also getting a degree. By my final year of university, I'd kind of fallen into tabletop and playing it and really enjoying it and writing the odd bit and piece for it, but had nothing published or anything until I put together the Combat Wheelchair and posted that online, and then this.
So I read that you came up with the idea, at least in principle, during a lecture, and that you scribbled it on the back of a notebook or something like this. Is that right? You should have been listening.
To be fair, it was a lecture that you pretty much like only had to turn up for attendance to go towards your grade, because I wasn't doing my essay on that topic, but I was like, I have to attend anyway because of attendance. So I went and I was kind of half listening. I was like, maybe there might be some things that are relevant to my essay. But you are right. Please do listen in your lectures and, you know, work hard on your essays and everything. I was like.
So you were there. And where does this idea come from? Because presumably at some point it manifested in your head is this idea that something's not right in these games. What happens?
It was during my early years at uni, I guess, where it kind of started, where I wanted to play a disabled character for the first time. And because I realized I'd pretty much only been playing able-bodied characters and I'm not able-bodied. And I was like, I'd be really nice to play someone like me. Our DM, who is a lovely person, meant nothing horrible by it, but went, oh, there's no rules for that. I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, oh, well, you could just, you know, take some negatives. And I was like, but that's not how it works. But, you know, and then I started talking about it more on Twitter and discussing it with both the disabled community and the TTRPG community and all the areas where they intersected. I was then playing with a group of friends that I'd made, and they were disabled, and a few of them used wheelchairs, and they were like, "It'd be really fun if we could just like play D&D characters who use wheelchairs, and the wheelchairs can be part of, you know, the combat and everything." It was literally like a day or so later, I'd been kind of thinking on that session and that call, and as I was in that lecture, because I was like, not that I wasn't paying attention, but that it wasn't relevant to my essay, I was like kind of thinking about it, and wrote some stuff down. It was literally just like three actions that are still part of the core rules for the chair now, which is your ram, tire strike, and crush. And then we started, you know, playing with it like in a session, and we were like, okay, it needs to account for this and account for that. And then I kind of had like a very rough skeletal structure, worked on it more from there. I even used, you know, the university resources, like going to the library, taking out, taking them off the shelves and studying, in my spare time between, you know, writing my final, for studying for my finals, reading about different types of wheelchair sports and the Paralympics and things like that, also reading about fantasy and disability and how they interconnect and the kind of representation, to be aware of any pitfalls I might have accidentally fall into whilst creating it. It eventually all came together, and eventually I had the, you know, the confidence to post it online to the general public, which was nerve-wracking.
How long between the idea and then posting it to the public? How long was that gap?
It was, I think, a year, or maybe just slightly over a year.
Okay.
Because it kind of just stayed like in closed circles with friends, just kind of figuring out what do I need to take into account with regards to the rules, and all of that. It kind of was a long process, but it's been a fun one.
So do you remember the year it came out?
It was,
I've got it written down.
just because I'm working on the rewrite. It came out on August 12th, 2020, so nearly 2 years ago now.
Okay. So it gets quite a lot of attention from what I've seen. How are you feeling around this? Do you remember releasing it? Were you quite nervous?
I released it thinking it will get a few notes. I'm sure that people in the community I've been talking to and with, you know, will enjoy it, and that it will mean something to them and to my friends who use wheelchairs and want to play characters like them. I posted it and thought nothing more of it. It all kind of just took off, and I was like, oh, okay. it was much like, as I was saying earlier, it was also like another moment that was very surreal. I was like, oh, okay, you know, like seeing it take off, especially far greater than I ever anticipated.
So what was the reaction like? Because I remember seeing at some point there were people from Wizards of the Coast even talking about it and kind of praising it and saying, you know, this is something that we should have in the official rules for the game.
I had some people who worked there, and I'm not sure if they still do, because they change their staff every now and then, but they retweeted it, you know, showing support for it, and saying, you know, that it's something that should be in D&D, or exist, you know, in the D&D sphere. But I don't know anything about official rules. I haven't been approached or asked for any of that. But yeah, getting to, you know, getting the support of people like that helped it gain traction. And yeah, I think, you know, that kind of made it blow up further than I ever thought it would.
Yeah, was the attention welcome? Was that good, or was there any resistance from certain areas of the D&D community?
It was for the most part positive. People being excited for it and stuff. And then there were others who were like, but wouldn't a disabled person just have a fantasy about not being disabled? And I was like, no. And the fact that you seem to think a disabled person's fantasy is not being disabled kind of, you know, tells on what you think about disabled people as a person. And, you know, there are people who were trying to say, but, you know, like in a setting where magic exists, like, why wouldn't you just magic away your disability? And I was like, that's not how it works. And stuff like that. Just basically, you know, the same old ableist rhetoric of disabled people not allowed in my fantasy game. You know, in a game where submarines and pirate ships in space exist and there are dragons and magic, a chair with wheels is taking it a step too far. which, yeah, was wild. But, you know, it still gets that now. At its worst, there were death threats, but, like, wow. You know, all from kind of throwaway accounts, nothing actually like substantial, all people who were, you know, too afraid to kind of say it to your face kind of people. That sucked for a while.
Because, you know, as throwaway as the comments may or may not be, they still get through, right? They still...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was just... me being, I think I was just really tired of it, you know, because like
for sure
there's only so much you can take as a person, and also as well that like all of them thought they had like some magical point, you know, owning the liberals, I guess, kind of point, where it was like, no, you've just said the same thing that 9,000 other people have said, and all of them are wrong because, you know, you aren't disabled and you don't know what the experience is like, and you just think disability equal bad, you know? And so, yeah, it's nowhere near as bad anymore. There are a few that make it into my spam folder, and they're always a delight because they're always like, you know, poorly written and poorly thought out and hilarious for the most part now. But like, you know, when I first published, well, first posted it online, it was overwhelming to deal with, like, you know, suddenly getting that much attention on something you've done when you didn't anticipate or expect it to get that big. It was, yeah, really overwhelming. You know, now it can still get overwhelming, but now it's more like it's a project that I enjoy returning to and I have fun working on and adding stuff to, and I care more about the people it makes happy than those who are upset. Like, you know, I don't care. We have the running joke now of whenever a new update gets posted, someone puts in the replies an image, and it's called Combat Wheelchair Bingo, and it's like all of the reasons why a wheelchair can't exist in D&D, and we wait for, you know, people to comment that and have a laugh about it. It's the followers like that that have like kind of held together when I've been really bad, because, you know, they make it something that, you know, is inherently really sad to see, the fact that people are like that upset over more people enjoying D&D and getting into it. You know, they turn it into something hilarious. Like, it genuinely is hilarious, like absurd, that people feel so threatened by a chair with wheels in a game where you can be anything. Like, that's the point, you know. And yeah, it's yeah, just very bizarre. But it's far more fun to work on now than it is daunting. And a lot of that has come down to the support that pretty much everyone who, you know, follows me and has retweeted it has shown for it.
I'm glad. It sounds like you have a healthy relationship with it now. And some of the support has been incredible. I saw that someone created a whole line of miniatures.
Yes, Strata did. Yeah, they reached out. For the most part, they work usually in tandem with Steamforged. So they're the people who made the miniatures for, like, you know, Dungeons and Doggos, and I believe they also have some of the sculptors who sculpt the boss miniatures and monster miniatures for the ones that you see on the Critical Role campaigns for, like, the bosses and stuff. They said that, you know, usually we do stuff in the background, but we saw this and we thought this is a great opportunity to show support for something and also, you know, step into the limelight showing support for something, and that they firmly, you know, believed in. And the money, I think 25% of the profit goes to the Ehlers Danlos Society, which is a UK charity. I think there's also a US equivalent, or they have the charity in the US as well, but I can't remember what it's called there. The rest of the money, like, nobody profits off it. It all just goes into paying for them to be printed. So pretty much, 75% goes to printing, 25% literally just goes straight to the charity. So I, you know, worked with them, and they were, you know, really supportive. And we've even had Paralympians and such help work on the line telling us. I think it was our ranger. When they were designing the ranger, they had a Paralympian who is a wheelchair archer to show how the wheelchair is adjusted and accommodating for an actual bow for archery.
Awesome.
It's all been, like, correct. And the monk as well, the monk miniature has a tennis wheelchair, because they're very, like, designed for quick speed, turning, impact, and agile movement, which, you know, everything that a monk should be in terms of the class build. We had a lot of fun designing them. And it was, you know, really cool to see one of them on Critical Role. Matt Mercer painted one to use as a miniature for Dagon, the character. He uses a wheelchair in the Mighty Nein campaign.
Awesome. So do you have two questions here? Do you have any idea how many people have, I think you're on version 3 now. Do you have any idea how many people have downloaded the combat wheelchair add-on for Dungeons? How many people are using it? That's a difficult thing to quantify.
No idea. Probably. I don't think I really have, like, a definite number or anything. But I can say, like, you know, it's reached places like Brazil, and there are people in Japan using it as well. And I've had emails from people, you know, across the world being like, hey, like, we use it. And we printed it off, or we downloaded it and either, you know, translated it for their table, because not everybody speaks English, but they translated it and, you know, are using it at their table. And there are people who've reached out and say that they use it as kind of gleaning who they want at their table, that if somebody has a complaint about it, they're like, yeah, you're not the person we want to play with, you know, especially, you know, if their reasoning is deliberate ignorance, because I've said before, you know, there's a big difference between just being ignorant of something and then willful ignorance. And it's the willful part that's the very harmful kind. It's kind of daunting to think about still on that level, where I'm like, oh yeah, people across the world have used this thing that I thought would only get my friends using it, and maybe a couple of other people. And it's bizarre to think of in terms of shows that it's been on, just like Critical Role and Rivals of Waterdeep, where I'm like, yeah, they've been on, you know, official D&D shows. That's wild. used by DMs that I really, respect, because, you know, I hold them in high regard. They got me into D&D as well. So
do you have a plan with the Combat Wheelchair add-on? So it's on version 3 now. Do you feel like you have much that you want to add to it still? Do you feel like you want to push it to become an official part of the, not canon, I don't know what the word is, but official part of the rules? What's your plan with it, if you have one?
With regards for ever being official, it's been made pretty clear to Wizards that, like, you know, I'm open to talk with them about that. I've just heard nothing from them. But I would like to, there are still things that I want to add. I've got some, ideas for, like, essentially what's like, a little brochure that will go in the PDF that's, showing different types of, like, wheelchairs from, like, across, like, the realms, I guess, or from different locations. Like, I've talked about it on Twitter, but I've got ideas for combat wheelchairs that are designed a bit more for, like, campaigns like Baldur's Gate. So they're very, like, Mad Max Fury Road. And then there are ones for the northern realms, where obviously it's ice and snow, and that they're more like sleds, and that there are specific types of, like, sled dogs that pull them, and different types of upgrades from all over. There's a steam powered one that I want to get down officially, which is inspired for the setting of Sigil and Planescape and all of that. And there are a few new upgrades and stuff that I've got in mind that I've been working on in my spare time. I've done all the subclasses that I want to do. I think every subclass now for D&D that, you know, exists now has a specialized subclass. I've written my own class as well for it, and yeah, there's been a lot. And there are a couple short story things that I want to add on, because the most recent edition version of the Combat Wheelchair has some flash fiction in it, which is about one of my D&D characters who uses a combat wheelchair. I think I would either like to get it, if it doesn't get to be part of the official rules, that I would like to get a print version out that people can optionally pay for if they want, like, a hardback version. But otherwise,
right, because at the moment it's free at the
yeah,
moment.
Yeah. And I'd still keep the PDF online for free for people. Then people have an option that if they want, like, a nice hardcover for their shelves, because I know people like collecting module books like that. That it would be, you know, something nice for them to have, especially because in the most recent version, which is version 3.0.1, I reached out, and loads of disabled people in the community, artists, did the artwork for it this time around, and it's all, you know, of a standard that I kind of wanted it to be from, like, the day that, like, I wrote it down. I was like, yeah, I want it to have, like, all this cool artwork and everything. And I've ended up in the position where I could pay specifically disabled artists to do it, because I wanted to keep it, you know, like a project that disabled people had worked on. And getting to do that was really fun. And I would like to see it, if I have the opportunity, for it to be, like, in print. I think that would be really cool.
That would be cool. So specifically, Wizards of the Coast have never contacted you, have never talked to you about any of this?
Not about the combat wheelchair, no. I've done some stuff on with Wizards, but that was through Magic the Gathering on Strixhaven, and it was like a consultant edit kind of thing, rather than anything to do with my work and what I do here, or about the combat wheelchair.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were in a position where you were able to pay people, but this is largely, you know, you don't charge for this for the combat wheelchair add-on, because that's against the principle of it, mm-hmm. I suppose. But your paid work is for Artalzorian Games, is that right?
They're one of the people who hire me, yeah.
Okay.
For different projects and stuff.
So for them, so I heard that obviously The Witcher has been a large part of the work that you've done. Is that correct? I'm saying that.
Yes. I've done some small stuff on Cyberpunk, which was DLC stuff. But The Witcher is like, I've written, you know, two adventures for that and other stuff with them on that. So I've done a lot more for The Witcher.
So I heard that you got into The Witcher through The Witcher 3 video game. In fact, in The Witcher universe, and friends were talking about the game, and that got you into the books. Is that right?
Yes. A partner at the time played Witcher 3. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I was like, I'll give it a go. Kind of really like fell in love with the world. I don't think I experienced the game as it was meant to be experienced, because obviously it's the third installment and I didn't know anything about the characters, but I enjoyed the game for what it was. My partner was like, oh, there's a book series it's based on. And I was like, oh, okay. and went and got that, read them all, thoroughly enjoyed them. And then I was like, okay, now I have to play the video games, like from 1 through 3. And then, you know, managed to get through 1 with its tanky controls. but I really enjoyed it. And then 2 was also great. But yeah, 3 is like a fantastic game. And the fact that, you know, it has 2 DLCs, which are both game length and super cheap, but brilliantly written and everything. Yeah, they're an amazing game. Like, I don't think... I always thought that, like, you know, it might be one of those games that people kind of hyped on a little bit and it's not that good. But no, Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, like, is a very good game and deserves the awards that it still gets to this day, quite frankly.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you get in contact with Artalzorian? Because they seem to be quite open and, you know, where Wizards maybe aren't. I know that there's a size difference in the companies here, but they seem to be quite open and approachable. How did that relationship come about?
I found out, I think just before my birthday or something, that there was a Witcher tabletop game. And I was like, oh, nice. Like, it was literally only the core rule book at this point. And I got gifted that by my parents for my birthday. You know, really wanted to play a game of it. Hadn't been able to get one going just because disinterest in my friend group, which, you know, fine, which is not for everyone. I think it was one of Wandering DM's streams on Twitch. It was a charity stream, which was Kelly Butler, Dokako, and Matt Mercer playing Triss, Geralt, and Dandelion, respectively, on an adventure, and it was all for charity and everything, and I really enjoyed it, and I did, like, some doodles and tweets about it, and it was fun. It was a really fun, like, experience. Artalzorian Games kind of reached out through there, and I got invited to the next charity game that they did, which was Doug Cockle, Kelly Butler, and B. Dave Walters, and Johnny Chiodini, and I got to play my character, Ren, who was like my own character, and she's disabled. She was a lot of fun to play, and it was a blast, and I had so much fun. And I was already at that point very passionate about The Witcher vocally on Twitter anyway. Artalsorian just reached out and they were like, hey, we have essentially openings coming up where if you want to, you know, try and get a writing place with us, you can submit a short adventure that you write, we'll then go from there, and whoever we choose, you know, we'll get to write on the next book. And I was like, sure, why not? It only has to be a short adventure. I think it was something like 4 pages or something. I wrote 12 pages. it got away from me a bit. I ended up putting in like a small, like, you know, dictionary kind of key of the elder speech and stuff. I really got like excited about it, submitted it, thought, you know, I've shot my shot. I either get it or I don't. Just before I'd graduated university, they reached out and they were like, hey, yeah, we'd love for you to come in and write on a book of tales for us. And yeah, it all kind of just from there. I then got to go on to other stuff with them, which was, incredibly kind of them. And it's been lots of fun. I've enjoyed everything that I've worked on with them.
Fantastic. So are you doing... So you've just done some work with them. Are you doing more work with them in the future?
I've just finished something recently with them. I'm not sure about their future projects and stuff, because I think pretty much everywhere has kind of been on hold with COVID and stuff. Projects have been delayed stuff. So I'm not sure with where they're at and what they plan to do next. But I know that, you know, they've been bringing out more Cyberpunk Red DLCs and stuff. So hopefully, fingers crossed, I get to work on more Witcher stuff with them, because it's been a lot of fun doing that. It's always fun working for them. They're just like a great company to work with. Very receptive to fans, what they've enjoyed, what they want to see more of, and very outspoken on Twitter about their stances on, like for example, with the disability representation and how they wanted to do better in this edition of Cyberpunk, and how they want to do better in future Witcher projects and stuff. So they've been quite outspoken about that. And have actively, you know, been shown to be taking the steps forward with that too.
Fantastic. And I mentioned in the introduction as well that you've done some work for Pathfinder and Starfinder and some other games. And which other things have you been working on? Did that encompass all the kind of work that you've been doing, or are there other things that are occupying your time at the moment?
At the moment, it's been stuff... like small kind of writing jobs, mostly on people's either upcoming Kickstarter events or on stuff that will soon be released. It's been a lot of jumping around from place to place. At the moment as well, because with Christmas and everything, there's always like kind of... I guess a period of where like it goes a little bit quiet for a while over Christmas because of like holidays, and usually that's when stuff goes out to print, is over the holidays and stuff like that, and then projects usually get picked up around now, so fingers crossed I get brought on for more things. There's Arcadia and stuff that I've worked on as well, which was a lot of fun, getting to do a character for that, and getting to see people really enjoy that too. It's always difficult to talk about, because I'm like, a lot of it is under NDA. So I'm like vaguely having to talk about things without saying too much. But there is some stuff that should be coming out, I think, this year. I can't say when, because of like the whole delay with COVID on printing and stuff that it's had the effect.
For sure.
But yeah, hopefully this year we'll get to see some of those projects that I worked on, you know, come out and people get to enjoy them.
Fantastic. So kind of coming to the end of my my questions, but I have a few that I ask everybody, and we'll see what your answers are. So the first one is, what was your first game that you played, if you remember?
I'm trying to think. Oh god. I know it was like, it was either a PlayStation 1 game or a GameCube game, one or the other. I think PlayStation 1, I think, because in the first Crash Bandicoot game, I think.
Okay.
First one. Kind of, you know, that era, along with like the first Spyro game, I guess. And then if I'm going with GameCube, I definitely remember playing a lot of Zelda Wind Waker on that, which still remains one of my favorite Zelda games.
It's a wonderful game.
It's such a good game. So yeah, like those two, well, those three technically, games are the ones that I remember playing.
While we're on this topic, actually, consider consulting on video games? Because, you know, tabletop RPGs is one thing, but would you cross over into video games? Is there any interest
there? I consulted with Codename Entertainment on the Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms, because my D&D character Talon, who uses a wheelchair, is in that game now. That was back in November 2020, I think it was, that they reached out, and then he came out in January 2021-ish, this kind of time, last year. And I consulted on that, and that was a lot of fun, you know, because it's just, I would definitely like to work on either video game representation of disability or even in TV. I think that would also be like a lot of fun, or just stuff like TV, and in terms of TV, anything from like, you know, live action shows to cartoons, I think would also be a really fun like angle to go with. I mean, if I had to say like what my dream would be, it would be to get to work on something Star Wars related from a disability perspective. I would sell my soul happily for an opportunity to do something with Star Wars, especially because one of my, like, the characters that I go to in terms of a good villain who is also disabled is Darth Maul, because his representation of his disability isn't what, like, his disability isn't what makes him evil or a bad person. He just is a bad person who happens to be disabled, which is how you should go about it.
What is his disability? I'm not aware.
So he got chopped in half by Obi-Wan, and he gets cybernetic legs. So he has prosthetics. You know, they could have fallen into the pitfall of, oh, he's angry that, you know, Obi-Wan made him disabled, and therefore, you know, he takes it out on everyone else, which would be, you know, typical of how a disabled villain would be represented. But instead, it's less about him being disabled. He's after Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan was only a Padawan, and he thinks it's like a massive insult, essentially, because Maul's like, you cost me everything. Like, my master, like, basically ditched me, and like, you were like a Padawan, that's not fair. Now I'm going to kill everyone you love, you know, and get revenge on you because you showed me up, basically. you know, that's like one of my favorite things about the character is he just happens to be disabled. And his disability comes up sometimes in very like unique ways. He has these cybernetic legs, and I think they have durasteel in them, or a type of steel in Star Wars that is magnetic, and they turn the the magnets on in the ship while he's trying to escape to like anchor him in place. And it works for a moment, because then they remember he's a very powerful force user. And yeah, so like, even though they use his disability in that fight, like he still navigates his disability in an effective and very like fitting way for that character. Yeah, he's just a great character. And, you know, I have a soft spot for Sam Witwer anyway. Like, he's a great person. And him doing Darth Maul's voice is just perfect. Like, he is the perfect Darth Maul.
So is this why you have a Darth Maul tattoo? Is that why he's made
well,
it into
yeah,
your...
like, I picked basically the characters that I really liked. And Darth Maul was like, yeah, definitely, I have to. If I'm going to have one of the Sith, it's going to be Darth Maul, because I have in my friend group, the controversial opinion that he is the best Sith character, hands down, in all of Star Wars. And I know that's like a big thing to say, but I just, yeah, I really love Darth Maul a lot. Like, he's just like very interesting, very fun character. His whole arc in Clone Wars and how it gets resolved in Rebels is just, yeah, chef's kiss. Incredible writing, very good character.
So, Star Wars. I have a soft spot for Darth Nihilus, and particularly, I've just always enjoyed this idea that there's not even a person under the cloak. It's a bit like one of the wraiths in Lord of the Rings almost. It's just like a vortex almost sucking in just force energy. And it always bugs me when I see pictures of Darth Nihilus with a human shape or like a humanoid shape underneath, because I'm like, that's not... I once spoke to Obsidian about this, and the person who designed the character was like, yeah, it's not, there's no person under there. It's just it's just a wound.
Yeah,
in the force.
He gave me very like big Eldritch horror vibes when I first read about him, and I was like, yes, like that's very cool as a concept. I love that so much.
And I also loved sort of adjacent to him, I also loved Darth Sion and Darth Treya as well, obviously, but I loved about Darth Sion how he was literally holding himself together with the Force. Yeah. And people seem to overlook those characters, but I loved that someone would be so angry or have so much willpower, they'd be literally holding themselves
together.
Yeah,
that's cool. There are a lot of very cool Sith concepts, and also dark, I guess, because they're not technically Sith, you could call them dark Jedi concepts as well, like that, where it's just, yeah, like, there's, I know that, like, they're all, like, legends now for the most part, but just, like, some things about the expanded universe are just, like, so off the rails, like, which is just extremely fun, like, to read about. But I am glad that, like, you know, characters like Bane stayed canon, because he appears in Clone Wars in one season for like an episode or something, and he's voiced by Mark Hamill.
I love this when characters creep in somehow into a series and you're like, yes, they're canon.
And in Bad Batch as well, there's a reference to Darth Revan in the background of like one scene, and I was just like, yes, he's canon again.
Yes.
Like, very excited. And you know, we're supposed to be getting a new High Republic game and all of that, so like I'm just... And Knights of the Old Republic is getting remastered as well, so very exciting time to be in the Star Wars fandom. Not just from a TV show perspective, but from a, you know, video games and comics and stuff that are coming out. It's very exciting.
It is exciting. Okay, that was a tangent. Let me get back
Star
to
Wars
my questions.
Star Wars is always a tangent.
So that was your first game. Do you remember what the last game was that you played?
What was I playing the other day? Was
it Star Wars?
No, it wasn't. The day before that, I was playing Republic Commando on my Switch, because they ported it for Switch. Yesterday, I was playing the new Pokemon Arceus.
Okay.
That's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to enjoy it.
Oh, good. So this is the hard one. What is your favorite game?
Witcher 3. Witcher 3. Yeah, Wild Hunt. Specifically Blood and Wine DLC.
Okay.
Fantastic. Who doesn't like vampires? It's fun.
I really loved the relationship between, I can't remember what he was called now, but the old vampire
Regis.
Is your friend, and I loved it.
Regis. Yeah, Regis.
And then when they were sitting in the graveyard and having a chat.
Yeah, it's they got it perfectly from like the book to like putting him in the game. It was just it was great. It was like very much you could tell that the people who'd like written that cared very much about Regis as a character, which I appreciated as a big Regis stan.
Yeah.
That, you know, getting to see that dynamic. It's like, it's just a fun dynamic, like a monster hunter and a monster, and them being like best friends and getting each other on a very deep level is just very sweet. I love that.
Because they're almost two sides of the same coin, I suppose.
Yeah, and they're like that in the books as well. It's very sweet.
Oh, lovely. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for spending this time with me.
No problem.
And talking about all things that I could talk about for much, much longer. You can support Sarah's work on Patreon, I think, and I'll supply a link to this description in the description below. And also, you can tip on Ko-fi. Ko-fi? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I pronounce it Ko-fi, but I don't know. I've heard people say coffee.
Yeah,
who knows.
It sounds weird, I guess, if you say coffee. What's that? What, a cup of coffee? Yeah, but that's the anyway, that's another discussion. But I'll pop these helpful links to everything Sarah in the description below. But a final thank you to you, Sarah, for spending the time, and a final thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another interesting guest. Bye for now.